Disc 3.
Chapter 9. The only people who really did justice to Lucy's excellent lunch were the two boys and Cedric Crackenthorpe, who appeared completely unaffected by the circumstances which had caused him to return to England. He seemed, indeed, to regard the whole thing as a rather good joke of a macabre nature. This attitude, Lucy noted, was most unpalatable to his brother Harold. Harold seemed to take the murder as a kind of personal insult to the Crackenthorpe family, and so great was his sense of outrage that he ate hardly any lunch. Emma looked worried and unhappy, and also ate very little. Alfred seemed lost in a train of thought of his own, and spoke very little. He was quite a good-looking man, with a thin, dark face, and eyes set rather too close together. After lunch, the police officers returned and politely asked if they could have a few words with Mr. Cedric Crackenthorpe. Inspector Craddock was very pleasant and friendly. "Sit down, Mr. Crackenthorpe. I understand you've just come back from the Balearics. You live out there?" "Have done for the last 6 years, in Ibiza. Suits me better than this dreary country." "You get a good deal more sunshine than we do, I expect," said Inspector Craddock agreeably. "You were home not so very long ago, I understand, for Christmas, to be exact. What made it necessary for you to come back again so soon?" Cedric grinned. "I've got a wire from Emma, my sister. We've never had a murder on the premises before. Didn't want to miss anything, so along I came." "You were interested in criminology?" "Oh, we needn't put it in such highbrow terms. I just like murders. Whodunits and all that. With a whodunit parked right on the family doorstep, it seemed a chance of a lifetime. Besides, I thought poor old Em might need a spot of help. Managing the old man and the police and all the rest of it." "I see. It appealed to your sporting instincts and also to your family feelings. I've no doubt your sister will be very grateful to you. Although her two other brothers have also come to be with her. But not to cheer and comfort," Cedric told him. "Harold is terrifically put out. Not at all a thing for a city magnate to be mixed up with the murder of a questionable female." Craddock's eyebrows rose gently. "Was she a questionable female?" "Well, you're the authority on that point. Going by the facts, it seemed to me likely. I thought perhaps you might have been able to make a guess at who she was." "Oh, come now, Inspector. You already know, or your colleagues will tell you, that I haven't been able to identify her." "I said a guess, Mr. Crackenthorpe. You might never have seen the woman before, but you might have been able to make a guess at who she was, or who she might have been." Cedric shook his head. "You're barking up the wrong tree. I've absolutely no idea. You're suggesting, I suppose, that she may have come to the Long Barn to keep an assignation with one of us. But we none of us live here. The only people in the house were a woman and an old man. You don't seriously believe she came here to keep a date with my revered Pop?" "Our point is," Inspector Bacon agrees with me, "that the woman may once have had some association with this house. It may have been a considerable number of years ago. Cast your mind back, Mr. Crackenthorpe." Cedric thought for a moment or two, then shook his head. "We've had foreign help from time to time, like most people, but I can't think of any likely possibility." "Oh, better ask the others. They'd know more than I would." "We shall do that, of course." Craddock leaned back in his chair and went on. "As you have heard at the inquest, the medical evidence cannot fix the time of death very accurately. Longer than 2 weeks, less than 4, which brings it somewhere around Christmas time. You have told me you came home for Christmas. When did you arrive in England, and when did you leave?" Cedric reflected. "Let me see, I flew. Got here on the Saturday before Christmas. That would be the 21st. "You flew straight from Mallorca?"
"Yes."
"Left at 5 in the morning and got here midday?" And you left?
I flew back on the following Friday, the 27th.
Thank you. Cedric grinned.
Leaves me well within the limit, unfortunately. But really, Inspector, strangling young women is not my favourite form of Christmas fun.
I hope not, Mr. Crackenthorpe. Inspector Bacon merely looked disapproving.
There'd be a remarkable absence of peace and goodwill about such an action, don't you agree?
Cedric addressed this question to Inspector Bacon, who merely grunted. Inspector Craddock said politely, "Well, thank you, Mr. Crackenthorpe. That will be all."
"And what do you think of him?" Craddock asked as Cedric shut the door behind him.
Bacon grunted again.
"Cocky enough for anything," he said. "I don't care for the type myself. A loose-living lot, these artists, and very likely to be mixed up with a disreputable class of woman."
Craddock smiled.
"I don't like the way he dresses, either," went on Bacon.
"No respect, going to an inquest like that. Dirtiest pair of trousers I've seen in a long while. And did you see his tie? Looked as though it was made of coloured string. If you ask me, he's the kind that would easily strangle a woman and make no bones about it.
Well, he didn't strangle this one, if he didn't leave Mallorca until the 21st.
And that's a thing we can verify easily enough." Bacon threw him a sharp glance.
"I notice that you're not tipping your hand yet about the actual date of the crime."
"No, we'll keep that dark for the present. I always like to have something up my sleeve in the early stages." Bacon nodded in full agreement.
"Spring it on him when the time comes," he said. "That's the best plan."
"And now," said Craddock, "we'll see what our correct city gentleman has to say about it all." Harold Crackenthorpe, thin-lipped, had very little to say about it. It was most distasteful, a very unfortunate incident. The newspapers, he was afraid. Reporters, he understood, had already been asking for interviews, all that sort of thing. Most regrettable. Harold's staccato, unfinished sentences ended. He leaned back in his chair with the expression of a man confronted with a very bad smell. The inspector's probing produced no result. No, he had no idea who the woman was or could be. Yes, he had been at Rutherford Hall for Christmas. He had been unable to come down until Christmas Eve, but had stayed on over the following weekend.
"That's that, then," said Inspector Craddock, without pressing his questions further. He had already made up his mind that Harold Crackenthorpe was not going to be helpful. He passed on to Alfred, who came into the room with a nonchalance that seemed just a trifle overdone. Craddock looked at Alfred Crackenthorpe with a faint feeling of recognition. Surely he had seen this particular member of the family somewhere before. Or had it been his picture in the paper? There was something discreditable attached to the memory. He asked Alfred his occupation, and Alfred's answer was vague.
"I'm in insurance at the moment. Until recently, I've been interested in putting a new type of talking machine on the market. Quite revolutionary. I did very well out of that, as a matter of fact."
Inspector Craddock looked appreciative, and no one could have had the least idea that he was noticing the superficially smart appearance of Alfred's suit and gauging correctly the low price it had cost. Cedric's clothes had been disreputable, almost threadbare, but they had been originally of good cut, an excellent material. Here there was a cheap smartness that told its own tale. Craddock passed pleasantly on to his routine questions. Alfred seemed interested, even slightly amused. "It's quite an idea that the woman might once have had a job here. Not as a lady's maid. I doubt if my sister has ever had such a thing. I don't think anyone has nowadays. But, of course, there is a good deal of foreign domestic labour floating about. We've had Poles, and a temperamental German or two. As Emma definitely didn't recognise the woman, I think that washes your idea out, Inspector. Emma's got a very good memory for a face. Though, if the woman came from London..." "What gives you the idea she came from London, by the way?" He slipped the question in quite casually, but his eyes were sharp and interested. Inspector Craddock smiled and shook his head.
Alfred looked at him keenly. Not telling, eh? Return ticket in her coat pocket, perhaps? Is that it?
It could be, Mr. Crackenthorpe.
Well, granting she came from London, perhaps the chap she came to meet had the idea that the Long Barn would be a nice place to do a quiet murder. He knows the set-up here, evidently. I should go looking for him if I were you, Inspector.
We are, said Inspector Craddock, and made the two little words sound quiet and confident. He thanked Alfred and dismissed him.
You know, he said to Bacon, I've seen that chap somewhere before.
Inspector Bacon gave his verdict. Sharp customer, he said. So sharp that he cuts himself sometimes.
I don't suppose you want to see me, said Brian Eastley apologetically, coming into the room and hesitating by the door. I don't exactly belong to the family. Let me see. You are Mr. Brian Eastley, the husband of Miss Edith Crackenthorpe, who died 5 years ago?
That's right. Well, it's very kind of you, Mr. Eastley, especially if you know something that you think could assist us in some way.
But I don't. Wish I did. The whole thing seems so ruddy peculiar, doesn't it? Coming along and meeting some fellow in that draughty old barn in the middle of winter wouldn't be my cup of tea.
It is certainly very perplexing, Inspector Craddock agreed.
Is it true she was a foreigner? Word seems to have got around to that effect.
Does that fact suggest anything to you? The inspector looked at him sharply, but Brian seemed amiably vacuous.
No, doesn't, as a matter of fact.
Maybe she was French, said Inspector Bacon with dark suspicion. Brian was roused to slight animation. A look of interest came into his blue eyes, and he tugged at his big, fair moustache.
Really? Gay Paris?
He shook his head.
On the whole, it seems to make it even more unlikely, doesn't it? Messing about in the barn, I mean. You haven't had any other sarcophagus murders, have you? One of these fellows with an urge, or a complex, thinks he's Caligula or someone like that.
Inspector Craddock did not even trouble to reject this speculation. Instead, he asked in a casual manner, "Nobody in the family got any French connections or relationships that you know of?" Brian said that the Crackenthorpes weren't a very gay lot.
"Harold's respectably married," he said. "Fish-faced woman, some impoverished peer's daughter. Don't think Alfred cares about women much. Spends his life going in for shady deals, which usually go wrong in the end. I dare say Cedric's got a few Spanish senoritas jumping through hoops for him in Ibiza. Women rather fall for Cedric. Doesn't always shave, and looks as though he never washes. Don't see why that should be attractive to women, but apparently it is. I say, I'm not being very helpful, am I?" He grinned at them. "You better get young Alexander on the job. He and James Stoddart West are out hunting for clues in a big way. Bet you they turn up something."
Inspector Craddock said he hoped they would. Then he thanked Brian Eastley and said he would like to speak to Miss Emma Crackenthorpe. Inspector Craddock looked with more attention at Emma Crackenthorpe than he had done previously. He was still wondering about the expression that he had surprised on her face before lunch. A quiet woman. Not stupid. Not brilliant, either. One of those comfortable, pleasant women whom men were inclined to take for granted, and who had the art of making a house into a home, giving it an atmosphere of restfulness and quiet harmony. Such, he thought, was Emma Crackenthorpe. Women such as this were often underrated. Behind their quiet exterior, they had force of character they were to be reckoned with. Perhaps, Craddock thought, the clue to the mystery of the dead woman in the sarcophagus was hidden away in the recesses of Emma's mind. Whilst these thoughts were passing through his head, Craddock was asking various unimportant questions. "I don't suppose there's much that you haven't already told Inspector Bacon," he said, "so I needn't worry you with many questions."
"Please ask me anything you like.
As Mr. Wimborne told you, we have reached the conclusion that the dead woman was not a native of these parts.
that may be a relief to you, Mr. Wimborne seemed to think it would be, but it makes it really more difficult for us.
She's less easily identified. But didn't she have anything? A handbag? Papers?
Craddock shook his head.
No handbag? Nothing in her pockets. You've no idea of her name, of where she came from? Anything at all?
Craddock thought to himself, she wants to know. She's very anxious to know who the woman is.
Has she felt like that all along, I wonder? Bacon didn't give me that impression, and he's a shrewd man.
We know nothing about her, he said. That's why we hoped one of you could help us. Are you sure you can't? Even if you didn't recognize her, can you think of anyone she might be?
He thought, but perhaps he imagined it, that there was a very slight pause before she answered. I've absolutely no idea, she said. Imperceptibly, Inspector Craddock's manner changed. It was hardly noticeable, except as a slight hardness in his voice.
When Mr. Wimborne told you that the woman was a foreigner, why did you assume that she was French?
Emma was not disconcerted. Her eyebrows rose slightly.
Did I?
Yes, I believe I did. I don't really know why, except that one always tends to think foreigners are French, until one finds out what nationality they really are. Well, most foreigners in this country are French, aren't they?
Oh, I really wouldn't say that was so, Miss Crackenthorpe. Not nowadays. We have so many nationalities over here. Italians, Germans, Austrians, all the Scandinavian countries.
Yes, I suppose you're right.
You didn't have some special reason for thinking this woman was likely to be French?
She didn't hurry to deny it. She just thought a moment, and then shook her head almost regretfully.
No, she said, I really don't think so.
Her glance met his placidly, without flinching.
Craddock looked towards Inspector Bacon. The latter leaned forward and presented a small enamel powder compact. Do you recognize this, Miss Crackenthorpe?
She took it and examined it.
No, it's certainly not mine.
You've no idea to whom it belonged?
No.
Then I don't think we need worry you any more for the present.
Thank you.
She smiled briefly at them, got up, and left the room. Again he may have imagined it, but Craddock thought she moved rather quickly, as though a certain relief hurried her.
Think she knows anything? Asked Bacon.
Inspector Craddock said ruefully, At a certain stage one is inclined to think everyone knows a little more than they are willing to tell you.
They usually do, too, said Bacon, out of the depth of his experience. Only, he added, it quite often isn't anything to do with the business in hand. It's some family peccadillo or some silly scrape that people are afraid is going to be dragged into the open.
Yes, I know.
Well, at least... But whatever Inspector Craddock had been about to say never got said, for the door was flung open, and old Mr. Crackenthorpe shuffled in a high state of indignation.
A pretty pass, he said. Things have come to a pretty pass when Scotland Yard comes down and doesn't have the courtesy to talk to the head of the family first. Who's the master of this house, I'd like to know? Answer me that. Who's master here?
You are, of course, Mr. Crackenthorpe, said Craddock soothingly, and rising as he spoke. But we understood that you had already told Inspector Bacon all you knew, and that your health not being good, we must not make too many demands upon it. Dr. Quimper said
that I dare say. I'm not a strong man. As for Dr. Quimper, he's a regular old woman, perfectly good doctor, understands my case, but... Inclined to wrap me up in cotton wool. Got a bee in his bonnet about food. Went on at me at Christmas time when I had a bit of a turn. What did I eat? When? Who cooked it? Who served it? Fuss, fuss, fuss. But, though I may have indifferent health, I am well enough to give you all the help that's in my power. Murder in my own house, or at any rate in my own barn. Interesting building, that. Elizabethan. Local architect says not. That fellow doesn't know what he's talking about. Not a day later than 1580. But, that's not what we were talking about. What do you want to know? What's your present theory?
It's a little too early for theories, Mr. Crackenthorpe. We are still trying to find out who the woman was.
Foreigner, you say?
We think so.
Enemy agent?
Unlikely, I should say.
You'd say. You'd say. They're everywhere, these people. Infiltrating. Why the Home Office lets them in beats me. Spying on industrial secrets, I'd bet. That's what she was doing.
In Brackhampton?
Factories everywhere. One outside my own back gate.
Craddock shot an inquiring glance at Bacon, who responded, "Metal boxes."
How do you know that's what they're really making? Can't swallow all these fellas, tell you. All right. If she wasn't a spy, who do you think she was? Think she was mixed up with one of my precious sons? It would be Alfred, if so. Not Harold, he's too careful. And Cedric doesn't condescend to live in this country. All right, then. She was Alfred's bit of skirt. And some violent fellow followed her down here, thinking she was coming to meet him, and did her in. How's that?
Inspector Craddock said diplomatically that it was certainly a theory, but Mr. Alfred Crackenthorpe, he said, had not recognized her.
Ta! Afraid, that's all. Alfred always was a coward. But he's a liar, remember, always was. Lie himself black in the face. None of my sons are any good. Crowd of vultures waiting for me to die. That's their real occupation in life. He chuckled. And they can wait. I won't die to oblige them. Well, if that's all I can do for you, I'm tired. Got to rest.
He shuffled out again. Alfred's bit of skirt, said Bacon questioningly. In my opinion, the old man just made that up. He paused, hesitated. I think, personally, Alfred's quite all right. Perhaps a shifty customer in some ways, but not our present cup of tea. Mind you, I did just wonder about that Air Force chap. Brian Eastley? Yes. I've run into one or two of his type. They're what you might call adrift in the world. Had danger and death and excitement too early in life. Now they find life tame. Tame and unsatisfactory. Anyway, we've given them a raw deal. Though I don't really know what we could do about it. But there they are. All past. And no future, so to speak. And they're the kind that don't mind taking chances. The ordinary fellow plays safe by instinct. It's not so much morality as prudence. But these fellows aren't afraid. Playing safe isn't really in their vocabulary. If Eastley were mixed up with a woman and wanted to kill her... He stopped, threw out a hand hopelessly. But... why should he want to kill her? And if you do kill a woman, why plant her in your father-in-law's sarcophagus? No, if you ask me, none of this lot had anything to do with the murder. If they had, they wouldn't have gone to all the trouble of planting the body on their own back doorstep, so to speak. Craddock agreed that that hardly made sense. Anything more you want to do here? Craddock said there wasn't. Bacon suggested coming back to Brackhampton and having a cup of tea, but Inspector Craddock said that he was going to call on an old acquaintance.
Chapter 10. Miss Marple, sitting erect against a background of china dogs and presents from Margate, smiled approvingly at Inspector Dermot Craddock. "I'm so glad," she said, "that you have been assigned to the case. I hoped you would be."
"When I got your letter," said Craddock, "I took it straight to the AC. As it happened, he had just heard from the Brackhampton people calling us in. They seemed to think it wasn't a local crime. The AC was very interested in what I had to tell him about you. He'd heard about you, I gather, from my godfather."
"Dear Sir Henry," murmured Miss Marple affectionately.
"He got me to tell him all about the little paddocks business. Do you want to hear what he said next?"
"Oh, please, tell me, if it's not a breach of confidence."
"He said, well, as this seems a completely cockeyed business, all thought up by a couple of old ladies who've turned out against all probability to be right, and since you already know one of these old ladies, I'm sending you down on the case. So, here I am. And now, my dear Miss Marple, where do we go from here? This is not, as you probably appreciate, an official visit. I haven't got my henchmen with me. I thought you and I might take down our back hair together first." Miss Marple smiled at him.
"I'm sure," she said, "that no one who only knows you officially would ever guess that you could be so human and better looking than ever. Don't blush. Now, what exactly have you been told so far?"
"I've got everything, I think. Your friend Mrs. McGillicuddy's original statement to the police at St. Mary Mead, confirmation of her statement by the ticket collector, and also the note to the station master at Brackhampton. I may say that all the proper inquiries were made by the people concerned, the railway people and the police. But there's no doubt you outsmarted them all by that most fantastic process of guesswork."
"Not guesswork," said Miss Marple. "And I had a great advantage. I knew Elspeth McGillicuddy. Nobody else did. There was no obvious confirmation of her story, and if there was no question of any woman being reported missing, then quite naturally they would think it was just an elderly lady imagining things, as elderly ladies often do. But not Elspeth McGillicuddy."
"Not Elspeth McGillicuddy," agreed the inspector. "I'm looking forward to meeting her, you know. I wish she hadn't gone to Ceylon. We're arranging for her to be interviewed there, by the way."
"My own process of reasoning was not really original," said Miss Marple. "It's all in Mark Twain, the boy who found the horse. He just imagined where he would go if he were a horse, and he went there, and there was the horse."
"You imagined what you'd do if you were a cruel and cold-blooded murderer," said Craddock, looking thoughtfully at Miss Marple's pink and white elderly fragility. "Really, your mind..."
"Like a sink, my nephew Raymond used to say," Miss Marple agreed, nodding her head briskly. "But, as I always told him, sinks are necessary domestic equipment, and actually very hygienic."
"Can you go a little further still? Put yourself in the murderer's place and tell me just where he is now?" Miss Marple sighed.
"I wish I could. I've no idea. No idea at all. But he must be someone who has lived in or knows all about Rutherford Hall."
"I agree, but that opens up a very wide field. Quite a succession of daily women have worked there. There's the Women's Institute, and the ARP wardens before them. They all know the long barn and the sarcophagus and where the key was kept. The whole set-up there is widely known locally. Anybody living round about might hit on it as a good spot for his purpose."
"Yes, indeed. I quite understand your difficulties."
Craddock said, "We'll never get anywhere until we identify the body."
"And that, too, may be difficult?"
"Oh, we'll get there in the end. We're checking up on all the reported disappearances of a woman of that age and appearance. There's no one outstanding who fits the bill.
The M.O. puts her down as about 35, healthy, probably a married woman, has had at least one child. Her fur coat is a cheap one, purchased at a London store. Hundreds of such coats were sold in the last 3 months, about 60% of them to blonde women. No sales girl can recognise the photograph of the dead woman, or is likely to if the purchase were made just before Christmas. Her other clothes seem mainly of foreign manufacture, mostly purchased in Paris. There are no English laundry marks. We've communicated with Paris, and they are checking up there for us. Sooner or later, of course, someone will come forward with a missing relative or lodger. It's just a matter of time. The compact wasn't any help? Unfortunately, no. It's a type sold by the hundred in the Rue de Rivoli, quite cheap. By the way, you ought to have turned that over to the police at once, you know. Or rather, Miss Islesbarrow should have done so. Miss Marple shook her head. But at that moment, there wasn't any question of a crime having been committed, she pointed out. If a young lady practicing golf shots picks up an old compact of no particular value in the long grass, surely she doesn't rush straight off to the police with it. Miss Marple paused, and then added firmly, I thought it much wiser to find the body first. Inspector Craddock was tickled. You don't seem ever to have had any doubts but that it would be found. I was sure it would. Lucy Islesbarrow is a most efficient and intelligent person. I'll say she is. She scares the life out of me. She's so devastatingly efficient. No man will ever dare marry that girl. Now, you know, I wouldn't say that. It would have to be a special type of man, of course. Miss Marple brooded on this thought for a moment. How is she getting on at Rutherford Hall? They're completely dependent upon her, as far as I can see. Eating out of her hand, literally, as you might say. By the way, they know nothing about her connection with you. We've kept that dark. She has no connection now with me. She has done what I asked her to do. So she could hand in her notice and go if she wanted to. Yes. But she stops on. Why? She has not mentioned her reasons to me. She's a very intelligent girl. I suspect that she has become interested. In the problem or in the family? It may be, said Miss Marple, that it is rather difficult to separate the two. Craddock looked hard at her. Have you got anything particular in mind? Oh, no. Oh, dear me, no. Miss Marple shook her head. Dermot Craddock sighed. So all I can do is to prosecute my inquiries, to put it in jargon. A policeman's life is a dull one. You'll get results, I'm sure. Any ideas for me? More inspired guesswork? I was thinking of things like theatrical companies, said Miss Marple rather vaguely. Touring from place to place, and perhaps not many home ties. One of those young women would be much less likely to be missed. Yes. Perhaps you've got something there. We'll pay special attention to that angle. He added, What are you smiling about? I was just thinking, said Miss Marple, of Elspeth MacGillicuddy's face when she hears we've found the body.
Well, said Mrs. MacGillicuddy, well.
Words failed her. She looked across at the nicely spoken, pleasant young man who had called upon her with official credentials, and then down at the photographs that he had handed her.
That's her, all right, she said. Yes, that's her. Poor soul. Well, I must say I'm glad they found her body. Nobody believed a word I said. The police, or the railway people, or anyone else. It's very galling not to be believed. At any rate, nobody could say I didn't do all I possibly could.
The nice young man made sympathetic and appreciative noises.
Where did you say the body was found?
In a barn at a house called Rutherford Hall, just outside Brackhampton.
Never heard of it. How did it get there, I wonder? The young man did not reply. Jane Marple found it, I suppose. Trust Jane. The body, said the young man, referring to some notes, was found by a Miss Lucy Islesbarrow. Never heard of her either, said Mrs. McGillicuddy. I still think Jane Marple had something to do with it. Anyway, Mrs. McGillicuddy, could you definitely identify this picture as that of the woman whom you saw in a train? Being strangled by a man, yes, I do. Now, can you describe this man? He was a tall man, said Mrs. McGillicuddy. Yes. And dark. Yes. That's all I can tell you, said Mrs. McGillicuddy. He had his back to me. I didn't see his face. Would you be able to recognize him if you saw him? Of course I shouldn't. He had his back to me. I never saw his face. You've no idea at all as to his age. Mrs. McGillicuddy considered. No, not really. I mean, I don't know. He wasn't, I'm almost sure, very young. His shoulders looked, well, set, if you know what I mean. The young man nodded. 30 and upward, I can't get closer than that. I wasn't really looking at him, you see. It was her, with those hands round her throat and her face, all blue. You know, sometimes I dream of it, even now. It must have been a distressing experience, said the young man sympathetically. He closed his notebook and said, When are you returning to England? Not for another 3 weeks. It isn't necessary, is it, for me? He quickly reassured her. Oh, no, there's nothing you could do at present. Of course, if we make an arrest... It was left like that. The mail brought a letter from Miss Marple to her friend. The writing was spiky and spidery and heavily underlined. Long practice made it easy for Mrs. McGillicuddy to decipher. Miss Marple wrote a very full account to her friend, who devoured every word with great satisfaction. She and Jane had shown them all right. Chapter 11. I simply can't make you out, said Cedric Crackenthorpe. He eased himself down on the decaying wall of a long derelict pigsty and stared at Lucy Islesbarrow. What can't you make out? What you're doing here? I'm earning my living. As a skivvy? He spoke disparagingly. You're out of date, said Lucy. Skivvy, indeed. I'm a household help, a professional domestician, or an answer to prayer, mainly the latter. You can't like all the things you have to do, cooking and making beds and wearing about with a hoopla, whatever you call it, and sinking your arms up to the elbows in greasy water. Lucy laughed. Well, not the details, perhaps, but cooking satisfies my creative instincts, and there's something in me that really revels in clearing up mess. I live in a permanent mess, said Cedric. I like it, he added defiantly. You look as though you did. My cottage in Ibiza is run on simple, straightforward lines. 3 plates, 2 cups and saucers, a bed, a table, and a couple of chairs. There's dust everywhere, and smears of paint and chips of stone. I sculpt as well as paint, and nobody is allowed to touch a thing. I won't have a woman near the place. Not in any capacity? Just what do you mean by that? I was assuming that a man of such artistic tastes presumably had some kind of love life. My love life, as you call it, is my own business, said Cedric with dignity. What I won't have... is woman in her tidying up interfering bossing capacity. How I'd love to have a go at your cottage, said Lucy. It would be a challenge. You won't get the opportunity. I suppose not. Some bricks fell out of the pigsty. Cedric turned his head and looked into its nettle-ridden depths.
Dear old Madge, he said.
I remember her well. A sow of most endearing disposition and a prolific mother. 17 in the last litter, I remember. We used to come here on fine afternoons and scratch Madge's back with a stick. She loved it.
Why has this place been allowed to get into the state it's in? It can't only be the war.
You'd like to tidy this up too, I suppose. What an interfering female you are. I quite see now why you would be the person to discover a body. You couldn't even leave a Greco-Roman sarcophagus alone. He paused and then went on. No, it's not only the war. It's my father. What do you think of him, by the way? I haven't had much time for thinking. Don't evade the issue. He's as mean as hell and, in my opinion, a bit crazy as well. Of course, he hates all of us, except perhaps Emma. And that's because of my grandfather's will. Lucy looked inquiring. My grandfather was the man who made it a munich, with the crunches and the crackerjacks and the cozy crisps. All the afternoon tea delicacies. And then, being far-sighted, he switched on very early to cheeses and canapés, so that we now cash in on cocktail parties in a big way. Well, the time came when Father intimated that he had a soul above crunches. He travelled in Italy, the Balkans and Greece, and dabbled in art. My grandfather was peeved. He decided my father was no man of business and a rather poor judge of art, quite right in both cases, so left all his money in trust for his grandchildren. Father had the income for life, but he couldn't touch the capital. Do you know what he did? He stopped spending money. He came here and began to save. I'd say that by now he's accumulated nearly as big a fortune as my grandfather left. And in the meantime, all of us, Harold, myself, Alfred and Emma, haven't got a penny of grandfather's money. I'm a Stony Brook painter. Harold went into business and is now a prominent man in the city. He's the one with the money-making touch, though I've heard rumours that he's in Queer Street lately. Alfred, well, Alfred is usually known in the privacy of the family as Flash Alf. Why? What a lot of things you want to know. The answer is that Alf is the black sheep of the family. He's not actually been in prison yet, but he's been very near it. He was in the Ministry of Supply during the war, but left it rather abruptly under questionable circumstances. And after that, there were some dubious deals in tinned fruits and trouble over eggs. Well, nothing in a big way. Just a few doubtful deals on the side. Isn't it rather unwise to tell strangers all these things? Why? Are you a police spy? I might be. I don't think so. You were here slaving away before the police began to take an interest in us. I should say... He broke off as his sister Emma came through the door of the kitchen garden. Hello, Em. You're looking very perturbed about something. I am. I want to talk to you, Cedric. I must get back to the house, said Lucy tactfully.
Oh, don't go, said Cedric.
Murder has made you practically one of the family. I've got a lot to do, said Lucy. I only came out to get some parsley. She beat a rapid retreat to the kitchen garden. Cedric's eyes followed her.
Good-looking girl, he said.
Who is she, really?
Oh, she's quite well known, said Emma. She's made a speciality of this kind of thing. But never mind, Lucy Islesparrow, Cedric, I'm terribly worried. Apparently the police think that the dead woman was a foreigner, perhaps French. Cedric, you don't think that she could possibly be Martine?
For a moment or two, Cedric stared at her as though uncomprehending.
Martine? But who on earth...
Oh, you mean Martine?
Yes.
Do you think... Why on earth should it be Martine?
Well, her sending that telegram was odd when you come to think of it.
It must have been roughly about the same time. Do you think that she may
after all, have come down here and...
Oh, nonsense!
Why should Martine come down here and find her way into the Long Barn?
What for?
Seems wildly unlikely to me. You don't think, perhaps, that I ought to tell Inspector Bacon, or the other one?
Tell him what?
Well, about Martine. About her letter.
Now, don't you go complicating things, sis, by bringing up a lot of irrelevant stuff that has nothing to do with all this. I was never very convinced about that letter from Martine anyway.
I was.
You've always been good at believing impossible things before breakfast, Olga. My advice to you is sit tight and keep your mouth shut. It's up to the police to identify their precious corpse. And I bet Harold would say the same.
Oh, I know Harold would. And Alfred also. But I'm worried, Cedric. I really am worried. I don't know what I ought to do.
Nothing, said Cedric promptly. You keep your mouth shut, Emma. Never go halfway to meet trouble, that's my motto.
Emma Crackenthorpe sighed. She went slowly back to the house, uneasy in her mind.
As she came into the drive, Dr. Quimper emerged from the house and opened the door of his battered Austin car. He paused when he saw her, then leaving the car, he came towards her.
"Well, Emma," he said, "your father's in splendid shape. Murder suits him. It's given him an interest in life. I must recommend it for more of my patients."
Emma smiled mechanically. Dr. Quimper was always quick to notice reactions. "Anything particular the matter?" he asked. Emma looked up at him. She had come to rely a lot on the kindliness and sympathy of the doctor. He had become a friend on whom to lean, not only a medical attendant. His calculated brusqueness did not deceive her. She knew the kindness that lay behind it.
"I am worried, yes," she admitted.
"Care to tell me? Don't if you don't want to."
"I'd like to tell you. Some of it you know already. The point is, I don't know what to do."
"I should say your judgment was usually most reliable. What's the trouble?"
"You remember, or perhaps you don't, what I once told you about my brother, the one who was killed in the war?"
"You mean about his having married or wanting to marry a French girl, something of that kind?"
"Yes. Almost immediately after I got that letter, he was killed. We never heard anything of or about the girl. All we knew, actually, was her Christian name. We always expected her to write or to turn up, but she didn't. We never heard anything until about a month ago, just before Christmas."
"I remember you got a letter, didn't you?"
"Yes, saying she was in England and would like to come and see us. It was all arranged, and then, at the last minute, she sent a wire that she had to return unexpectedly to France."
"Well?"
"The police think that this woman who was killed was French."
"They do, do they? She looked more of an English type to me, but one can't really judge. What's worrying you, then, is that just possibly the dead woman might be your brother's girl?"
"Yes."
"I think it's most unlikely," said Dr. Quimper, adding, "but all the same, I understand what you feel."
"I'm wondering if I ought not to tell the police about it all. Cedric and the others say it's quite unnecessary. What do you think?"
Dr. Quimper pursed up his lips.
He was silent for a moment or two, deep in thought. Then he said, almost unwillingly,
"It's much simpler, of course, if you say nothing. I can understand what your brothers feel about it. All the same..."
"Yes?"
Quimper looked at her. His eyes had an affectionate twinkle in them.
"I'd go ahead and tell them," he said. "You'll go on worrying if you don't. I know you."
Emma flushed a little.
"Perhaps I'm foolish."
"You do what you want to, my dear, and let the rest of the family go hang. I'd back your judgment against a lot of them, any day."
Chapter 12.
Girl! You girl! Come in here!
Lucy turned her head, surprised. Old Mr. Crackenthorpe was beckoning to her fiercely from just inside a door. You want me, Mr. Crackenthorpe?
Don't talk so much. Come in here.
Lucy obeyed the imperative finger. Old Mr. Crackenthorpe took hold of her arm and pulled her inside the door and shut it.
Want to show you something, he said.
Lucy looked round her. They were in a small room, evidently designed to be used as a study, but equally evidently not used as such for a very long time. There were piles of dusty papers on the desk and cobwebs festooned from the corners of the ceiling. The air smelt damp and musty. "Do you want me to clean this room?" she asked. Old Mr. Crackenthorpe shook his head fiercely.
"No, you don't. I keep this room locked up. Emma would like to fiddle about in here, but I don't let her. It's my room. See these stones? They're geological specimens."
Lucy looked at a collection of 12 or 14 lumps of rock, some polished and some rough. "Lovely," she said kindly. "Most interesting."
"You're quite right. They are interesting. You're an intelligent girl. I don't show them to everybody. I'll show you some more things."
"It's very kind of you, but I ought really to get on with what I was doing. With 6 people in the house..."
"Eating me out of house and home. That's all they do when they come down here. Eat. They don't offer to pay for what they eat, either. Leeches. All waiting for me to die. Well, I'm not going to die just yet. I'm not going to die to please them. I'm a lot stronger than even Emma knows."
"I'm sure you are."
"I'm not so old, either. She makes out I'm an old man. Treats me as an old man. You don't think I'm old, do you?"
"Of course not," said Lucy.
"Sensible girl. Take a look at this."
He indicated a large faded chart which hung on the wall. It was, Lucy saw, a genealogical tree, some of it done so finely that one would have had to have a magnifying glass to read the names. The remote forebears, however, were written in large, proud capitals with crowns over the names.
"Descended from kings," said Mr. Crackenthorpe. "My mother's family tree, that is. Not my father's. He was a vulgarian. Common old man. Didn't like me. I was a cut above him, always. Took after my mother's side. Had a natural feeling for art and classical sculpture. He couldn't see anything in it. Silly old fool. Don't remember my mother. Died when I was 2. Last of her family. They were sold up, and she married my father. But you look there. Edward the Confessor, Ethelred the Unready, whole lot of them. And that was before the Normans came. Before the Normans. That's something, isn't it?"
"It is indeed."
"Now, I'll show you something else."
He guided her across the room to an enormous piece of dark oak furniture. Lucy was rather uneasily conscious of the strength of the fingers clutching her arm. There certainly seemed nothing feeble about old Mr. Crackenthorpe today.
"See this? Came out of Lushington. That was my mother's people's place. Elizabethan, this is. Takes 4 men to move it. You don't know what I keep inside it, do you? Like me to show you?"
"Do show me," said Lucy politely.
"Curious, aren't you? All women are curious."
He took a key from his pocket and unlocked the door of the lower cupboard. From this he took out a surprisingly new-looking cash box. This again he unlocked.
"Take a look here, my dear. Know what these are?"
He lifted out a small paper-wrapped cylinder and pulled away the paper from one end. Gold coins trickled out into his palm.
"Look at these, young lady. Look at them. Hold them. Touch them. Know what they are?" "Bet you don't. You're too young. Sovereigns. That's what they are. good golden sovereigns. What we used before all these dirty bits of paper came into fashion. Worth a lot more than silly bits of paper. Collected them a long time back. I've got other things in this box, too. Lots of things put away in here. All ready for the future. Emma doesn't know. Nobody knows. It's our secret, Seagull. Do you know why I'm telling you and showing you?
Why?
Because I don't want you to think I'm a played-out, sick old man. Lots of life in the old dog yet. My wife's been dead a long time. Always objecting to everything she was. Didn't like the names I gave the children. Good Saxon names. No interest in that family tree. I never paid any attention to what she said, though. And she was a poor-spirited creature. Always gave in. Now, you're a spirited filly. A very nice filly, indeed. I'll give you some advice. Don't throw yourself away on a young man. Young men are fools. You want to take care of your future. You wait.
His fingers pressed into Lucy's arm. He leaned to her ear.
I don't say more than that. Wait. Those silly fools think I'm going to die soon. I'm not. Shouldn't be surprised if I outlived the lot of them. And then we'll see. Oh, yes, then we'll see. Harold's got no children. Cedric and Alfred aren't married. Emma, well, Emma will never marry now. She's a bit sweet on Quimper, but Quimper will never think of marrying Emma. There's Alexander, of course. Yes, there's Alexander. But, you know, I'm fond of Alexander. Yes, that's awkward. I'm fond of Alexander.
He paused for a moment, frowning, then said,
Well, girl, what about it? What about it, eh?
Miss Islesborough? Emma's voice came faintly through the closed study door. Lucy seized gratefully at the opportunity. Miss Crackenthorpe's calling me. I must go. Thank you so much for all you have shown me.
Don't forget our secret.
I won't forget, said Lucy, and hurried out into the hall, not quite certain as to whether she had or had not just received a conditional proposal of marriage. Dermot Craddock sat at his desk in his room at New Scotland Yard. He was slumped sideways in an easy attitude and was talking into the telephone receiver, which he held with one elbow propped up on the table. He was speaking in French, a language in which he was tolerably proficient. It was only an idea, you understand, he said. But decidedly it is an idea, said the voice at the other end from the prefecture in Paris. Already I have set inquiries in motion in those circles. My agent reports that he has two or three promising lines of inquiry. Unless there is some family, life, or a lover, these women drop out of circulation very easily and no one troubles about them. They have gone on tour, or there is some new man. It is no one's business to ask. It is a pity that the photograph you sent me is so difficult for anyone to recognize. Triangulation does not improve the appearance. Still, that cannot be helped. I go now to study the latest reports of my agents on this matter. There will be perhaps something. Au revoir, mon cher. As Craddock reiterated the farewell politely, a slip of paper was placed before him on the desk. It read, Miss Emma Crackenthorpe, to see Detective Inspector Craddock. Rutherford Hall case. He replaced the receiver and said to the police constable, Bring Miss Crackenthorpe up. As he waited, he leaned back in his chair, thinking. So he had not been mistaken. There was something that Emma Crackenthorpe knew. Not much, perhaps, but something. And she had decided to tell him. He rose to his feet as she was shown in, shook hands, settled her in a chair,
and offered her a cigarette, which she refused. Then there was a momentary pause. She was trying, he decided, to find just the words she wanted. He leaned forward. "You have come to tell me something, Miss Crackenthorpe. Can I help you? You've been worried about something, haven't you? Some little thing, perhaps, that you feel probably has nothing to do with the case, but, on the other hand, just might be related to it. You've come here to tell me about it, haven't you? It's to do, perhaps, with the identity of the dead woman? You think you know who she was? No, not quite that. I really think it's most unlikely, but... But there is some possibility that worries you. You'd better tell me about it, because we may be able to set your mind at rest. Emma took a moment or two before speaking. Then she said, "You have seen three of my brothers. I had another brother, Edmund, who was killed in the war. Shortly before he was killed, he wrote to me from France." She opened her handbag and took out a worn and faded letter. She read from it. "I hope this won't be a shock to you, Emmy, but I'm getting married to a French girl. It's all been very sudden, but I know you'll be fond of Martine and look after her if anything happens to me. We'll write you all the details in my next, by which time I shall be a married man. Break it gently to the old man, won't you? He'll probably go up in smoke." Inspector Craddock held out a hand. Emma hesitated, then put the letter into it. She went on, speaking rapidly. 2 days after receiving this letter, we had a telegram saying Edmund was missing, believed killed. Later he was definitely reported killed. It was just before Dunkirk, and a time of great confusion. There was no army record, as far as I could find out, of his having been married, but, as I say, it was a confused time. I never heard anything from the girl. I tried after the war to make some inquiries, but I only knew her Christian name, and that part of France had been occupied by the Germans, and it was difficult to find out anything without knowing the girl's surname or more about her. In the end, I assumed that the marriage had never taken place, and the girl had probably married someone else before the end of the war, or might possibly herself have been killed. Inspector Craddock nodded. Emma went on, "Imagine my surprise to receive a letter just about a month ago, signed Martine Crackenthorpe." "You have it?" Emma took it from her bag and handed it to him. Craddock read it with interest. It was written in a slanting French hand, an educated hand. "Dear Mademoiselle, I hope it will not be a shock to you to get this letter. I do not even know if your brother Edmund told you that we were married. He said he was going to do so. He was killed only a few days after our marriage, and at the same time the Germans occupied our village. After the war ended, I decided I would not write to you or approach you, though Edmund had told me to do so. But by then I had made a new life for myself, and it was not necessary. But now things have changed. For my son's sake I write this letter. He is your brother's son, you see, and I can no longer give him the advantages he ought to have. I am coming to England early next week. Will you let me know if I can come and see you? My address for letters is 126 Elvis Crescent, N10. I hope again this will not be the great shock to you. I remain with assurance of my excellent sentiments, Martine Crackenthorpe." Craddock was silent for a moment or two. He reread the letter carefully before handing it back. "What did you do on receipt of this letter, Miss Crackenthorpe?" "My brother-in-law, Brian Eastley, happened to be staying with me at the time, and I talked to him about it. Then I rang up my brother Harold in London and consulted him about it. Harold was rather sceptical about the whole thing and advised extreme caution. We must, he said, go carefully into this woman's credentials." Emma paused and then went on,
That, of course, was only common sense, and I quite agreed. But if this girl, woman, was really the Martine about whom Edmund had written to me, I felt that we must make her welcome. I wrote to the address she gave me in her letters, inviting her to come down to Rutherford Hall and meet us. A few days later, I received a telegram from London. Very sorry, forced to return to France unexpectedly. Martine. There was no further letter or news of any kind.
All this took place when?
Emma frowned. It was shortly before Christmas. I know, because I wanted to suggest her spending Christmas with us, but my father would not hear of it, so I suggested she should come down the weekend after Christmas, while the family would still be there. I think the wire saying she was returning to France came actually a few days before Christmas.
And you believe that this woman whose body was found in the sarcophagus might be this Martine?
No, of course I don't. But when you said she was probably a foreigner, well, I couldn't help wondering if perhaps...
Her voice died away.
Craddock spoke quickly and reassuringly. You did quite right to tell me about this. We'll look into it.
I should say there is probably little doubt that the woman who wrote to you actually did go back to France and is there now, alive and well. On the other hand, there is a certain coincidence of dates, as you yourself have been clever enough to realize. As you heard at the inquest, the woman's death, according to the police surgeon's evidence, must have occurred about 3 to 4 weeks ago. Now, don't worry, Miss Crackenthorpe. Just leave it to us. He added casually, You consulted Mr. Harold Crackenthorpe. What about your father and your other brothers?
I had to tell my father, of course. He got very worked up. She smiled faintly. He was convinced it was a put-up thing to get money out of us. My father gets very excited about money. He believes, or pretends to believe, that he's a very poor man and that he must save every penny he can. I believe elderly people do get obsessions of that kind sometimes. It's not true, of course. He has a very large income and doesn't actually spend a quarter of it. Or used not to until these days of high income tax. Certainly, he has a large amount of savings put by. She paused and then went on. I told my other two brothers also. Alfred seemed to consider it rather a joke, though he too thought it was almost certainly an imposture. Cedric just wasn't interested. He's inclined to be self-centred. Our idea was that the family would receive Martine, and that our lawyer, Mr. Wimborne, should also be asked to be present.
What did Mr. Wimborne think about the letter?
We hadn't got as far as discussing the matter with him. We were on the point of doing so when Martine's telegram arrived.
You have taken no further steps?
Yes. I wrote to the address in London with please forward on the envelope, but I have had no reply of any kind.
Rather a curious business,
He looked at her sharply.
What do you yourself think about it?
I don't know what to think.
What were your reactions at the time? Did you think the letter was genuine, or did you agree with your father and your brothers? What about your brother-in-law, by the way? What did he think?
Oh, Brian thought that the letter was genuine.
And you?
I wasn't sure.
And what were your feelings about it, supposing that this girl really was your brother Edmund's widow?
Emma's face softened. I was very fond of Edmund. He was my favourite brother. The letter seemed to me exactly the sort of letter that a girl like Martine would write under the circumstances. The course of events she described was entirely natural. I assumed that by the time the war ended, she had either married again or was with some man who was protecting her and the child. Then perhaps this man had died or left her, and it then seemed right to her to apply to Edmund's family, as he himself had wanted her to do. The letter seemed genuine and natural to me, But, of course, Harold pointed out that if it was written by an impostor, it would be written by some woman who had known Martine and who was in possession of all the facts, and so could write a thoroughly plausible letter. I had to admit the justice of that. But, all the same, she stopped.
You wanted it to be true, said Craddock gently.
She looked at him gratefully. Yes, I wanted it to be true. I would be so glad if Edmund had left a son.
Craddock nodded. As you say, the letter, on the face of it, sounds genuine enough. What is surprising is the sequel.
Martine Crackenthorpe's abrupt departure for Paris, and the fact that you have never heard from her since. You had replied kindly to her, were prepared to welcome her. Why, even if she had to return to France, did you not write again?
That is, presuming her to be the genuine article. If she were an impostor, of course, it's easier to explain. I thought, perhaps, that you might have consulted Mr. Wimborne, and that he might have instituted inquiries which alarmed the woman. That, you tell me, is not so. That it's still possible that one or other of your brothers may have done something of the kind. It's possible that this Martine may have had a background that would not stand investigation. She may have assumed that she would be dealing only with Edmund's affectionate sister, not with hard-headed, suspicious businessmen. She may have hoped to get sums of money out of you for the child, hardly a child now, a boy presumably of 15 or 16, without many questions being asked. But instead, she found she was going to run up against something quite different. After all, I should imagine that serious legal aspects would arise. If Edmund Crackenthorpe left a son born in wedlock, he would be one of the heirs to your grandfather's estate. Emma nodded. Moreover, from what I have been told, he would, in due course, inherit Rutherford Hall and the land round it. Very valuable building land, probably, by now.
Emma looked slightly startled. Yes, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, I shouldn't worry, said Inspector Craddock. You did quite right to come and tell me. I shall make inquiries, but it seems to me highly probable that there is no connection between the woman who wrote the letter, and who was probably trying to cash in on a swindle, and the woman whose body was found in the sarcophagus.
Emma rose with a sigh of relief. I'm so glad I've told you. You've been very kind.
Craddock accompanied her to the door. Then he rang for Detective Sergeant Wetherall.
Bob, I've got a job for you. Go to 126 Elvers Crescent, N10. Take photographs of the Rutherford Hall woman with you. See what you can find out about a woman calling herself Mrs. Crackenthorpe. Mrs. Martine Crackenthorpe, who was either living there or calling for letters there between the dates of, say, 15th to the end of December.
Right, sir. Craddock busied himself with various other matters that were waiting attention on his desk. In the afternoon, he went to see a theatrical agent who was a friend of his. His inquiries were not fruitful. Later in the day, when he returned to his office, he found a wire from Paris on his desk. Particulars given by you might apply to Anna Stravinska of Ballet Maritsky. Suggest you come over Dessin Prefecture. Craddock heaved a big sigh of relief, and his brow cleared. At last. So much, he thought, for the Martine Crackenthorpe hair. He decided to take the night ferry to Paris.
End of Disc 3.